Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, people of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to Street Player Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is Monday, the 9th of June, 2014, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I just love that Yoshi's promo that I snatched from YouTube. Today's talented guest is the Latin band called Rucatan. And I don't know if I pronounced that right because my Spanish is not that good, but they have been making their way around the Bay Area. They were just at San Francisco's two-day festival celebrating Carnival and performed on Sunday, the 25th of May. They've also been lighting up crowds at Yoshi's Supper Club, also located in San Francisco Bay Area, and they are slated to appear at Tooth Cavern on the 14th of June and at Wayside Concerts in the Park Pleasanton. And on that schedule, there is a Los Angeles tour slated for late August. And they are quite busy, as you can see. So today, the lead of the band joins me. His name is Carlos Elizalde, and he joins me on Street Player here today on A Touch of Grace to discuss their incredible music and performance. So, Carlos, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Man, I have to tell you, I have to thank Keith Graham, a former bodyguard of James Brown. He told me about you guys shortly after the show that I did with him. And so I've been kind of like scouring the internet looking and finding your performances. And you guys are just bad, man. What can I say? You guys are just...
Oh, man, you're so kind, man. Thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
Yeah. So for the listeners today... the band members are Derek Rolando, Brian Camara, Ray Eurides, Blaine Hoopers, Jose Angel Amador, and then also you, the lead, Carlos Elizalde. So the question that I have for you, because I know it's just you and I this afternoon, but you are definitely representing the band, where did you grow up? What city and town did you call home?
I'll tell you where I grew up, but you missed one person. You forgot Carlos Hernandez, who's on guitar as well.
Oh, thank you.
No problem. And that's Blaine Hoops. You know, it's like basketball, the hoops. That's my boy over there on keyboard, saxophone. But yeah, I grew up in Richmond, California. You know, and for like the first 12 to 13 years, grew up in the East Bay over there, and then mom and pops had a little split up, and then he ended up moving to the Mission District, so I ended up spending my school days in Richmond, and then my summers I would be out in the Mission District around all those, you know, Latin cats that were playing music out there.
Wow, okay, so what was life like for you going from Richmond to Mission? What was the excitement in your life at that time, at that age?
You know, it was a trip back then, you know, being that I'm 52 now and stuff, but back in the day, there was a lot of things happening in Richmond that, you know, it was like a lot of differences, you know, a lot of separations and segregations and stuff. And being Latino, you know, I should have been like, you know, hanging out with the folks that were in the down on 23rd Street and cruising and everything, but I was a little bit more of a rocker and a soul lover, you know, listening to KBLX and all that, and so I loved music and stuff, and so I wasn't in that scene. And then of course, if I want to hang out with my brothers and go hang out and play some soul music and stuff. I wasn't just, you know, not in the mix yet, you know, because back then there was so much happening. So I didn't really have a calling back then. So I was kind of like this lost soul of a person that wanted to find a niche. And it was like funny, I would listen to music that was coming in from like the band Chicago, and I would hear Tower of Power, and I was like, wow, this is cool. And then of course, you know, you got your hero coming up, you got Carlos Santana coming in, so it's like a ray of hope, you know, this is cool, man, a Latino that's out there, you know, playing some music. And then, you know, with Tops, you know, bringing me up, he was bringing me into the cool music scene. He was listening to Ed Estrado and, you know, all the stuff that was coming in from Latin America, and my mom was listening to mariachi, and, you know, my dad was into the world-class music, bringing it from Italy and Greece and all that. So it was, that was my escape, you know. There was a lot of hard things happening in Richmond back in the day, you know. And then, of course, when I moved to Mission District, that was a whole different world. There was a melting pot out there of all kinds of cats, and they were listening to stuff like Sapo and Malo and, you know, of course, Carlos Santana and all that. And then they were turning me on to stuff like El Chicano and Tierra coming in from L.A. So it was like, whoa, check this out. So, you know, it opened my eyes up, you know, in regards to what I wanted to do in the future. And I thought there was a great hope and opportunity to maybe get into the scene, you know?
Yeah, I have to tell you right now, I know that Richmond definitely was a heavy community, and I'm not sure how well they're doing now. But George Livingston is a celebrity photographer, and I'm thinking that you might know him. His father was the mayor of Richmond at the time. Huh. So did you know about George at the time?
No, I didn't know them.
Yeah, George was he's a photographer for the celebrities, and his father was served on the board as the mayor for Richmond. So that's just interesting how 6 degrees of separation is. So it sounds to me like you already had a good head on your shoulder to know right from wrong, to know where to go, to actually do something progressive with your life as opposed to getting involved in what you could have gotten involved in that was, you know, circulating in on the streets of Richmond. So at what age did music pretty much become a part of your life? I know that your mother listened to the mariachi and your father was listening to music too. So at what age did it really become a part of your life where you just made the decision that you wanted to actually be a performer?
Well, you know, it came early and stuff, and of course with no really schooling or guidance at the time, all I did was live vicariously by the cats that were surrounding me. I had across the street some neighbors, and his name is Gary Raffinelli, and him and his brothers had a band called the Vandells, and so they lived right across the street. So at a young age, we're talking about 7, 8, 9 years old, and I'm listening to these guys, you know, rocking out, and they're playing original music. So I would sit over there and watch their rehearsal, and it was like, there was not really a calling in regards to which instrument was I going to play or was I even going to sing. I was more just kind of hanging out, checking it out. And then I had a cousin that, as a matter of fact, on this record, on the one that we have right now, the Brookathon album, Ed Elizalde, he did all the writing with Blaine and myself and Jose and the rest of the guys, and he played guitar and everything. And at the time, he was doing his scene, and he was playing with like some cousins that were called the Time, and they were called the Time before Moore's Day and the Time, but they were called Time, and they were playing.
Yeah.
So they were playing like some Beatles tunes and stuff like that. So I was kind of like checking that out, and then he ended up just blowing up because his guitar style was so great. And he ended up touring with like Peter Tosh and some other reggae bands. And he also was with Don Carlos. So I always watched him. He's a few years older than me, and I always watched what he was doing. So I was very influenced by a lot of artists, but nothing really came until way later. You know, it was like, again, there was no springboard for me at that point until probably into my 30s is when I finally started realizing that, hey, I want to get into this and stuff, because the doors had opened up, especially with the Latin music. It had really opened up because you had people like Gloria Estefan, and you had Ricky Martin, and you had, you know, Maná coming out of Mexico, and it was like, wow, this is way cool, you know. So I started doing country because it has such a cool feeling in it, and it's like, it's real. It's Main Street America, you know. It tells people fearing God and love and, you know, heartbreak and all that. And I thought that was a cool thing. So I kind of followed that for a little bit and tried my abilities at that. But then eventually, of course, you know, growing up in the Bay Area and being Latino and listening to Soul, Earth, Wind & Fire, and Tower of Power and all that, it was like, I need to do stuff that really, you know, moves my soul and my heart. So, of course, I started doing some side projects there, working with some other Cats bands, and then they started creating some of my own original music and using the format that I was brought up with. But that wasn't until in the 30s and stuff, you know, because I didn't think there was anything that I wanted to really do. And, of course, I gravitated to singing, and it was cool. You know, it was really cool. And what it did was is that I finally had a voice that I could sit there and speak what I was feeling inside. Because, you know, being back in Richmond, like you said, it was tough, you know, and it was like, you know, you're getting beaten up all the time and here, do this right. or sell this or do that. And it was just like, I didn't want to deal with that. So I finally left when I was about 19 and moved away from there and moved into the suburbs where I've been living for almost all my life. And even there, I didn't have a voice. So it was kind of cool to be able to do music. And now it's like, you know what's really cool is Latin is cool. Everybody's like, oh, man, Latin, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, mm-hmm. you're on the spearhead of the era right now. It's like a very cool situation.
Yeah, it really is a cool situation. You mentioned Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine. They were really hot. They really took it to mainstream. But, you know, I'm going to tell you a little story. I fell in love with a singer by the name of Luis Miguel. I'm not sure if you know who he is.
Oh, I love Luis Miguel. Beautiful voice.
Yeah. Let me just tell you.
What a romantic voice he's got.
Yeah, he does. And so I fell in love with Solamente Una Vez. And I had a Latin friend who worked with me at AT&T. And I played that CD to death. I think it was called El Segundo or Romances, I think is the name of that CD.
Oh,
but for me, not...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Romances. Oh, my God. That's a great album.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't know, you know, I'm not bilingual. I mean, I know some words in Spanish, but I actually got a chance to go see Luis Miguel with my friend Moon. He was at the arena down there in San Jose, and it was packed. And I felt like I was the only black guy out there. But let me just tell you, when that stage lit up and that man sang his song, I have to tell you, you don't have to know really what the words or the translation, because it's more of an emotion that he evoked. And I just love it. So as a singer, so you mentioned coming into your own like in the 30s and you fell into singing. So you were not formally trained as a singer, is that right?
No, not at all. You know, when I was a kid, here's the kicker, man. This is what I knew I was going to be a singer, but again, being bilingual and stuff, like if you sang in Spanish, it just didn't, you know, there was not really anything out there because it was regional music that you could sing or whatever, and I just didn't turn my key. You know, so when these other cats came out, it was like, oh, there's a ray of hope. But when I was a kid, I would lock myself in the room, and my first record was that album by the Beatles, which is, I think in America it's called Meet the Beatles or The Beatles, and it was, it had like Saw Her Standing There and a few other tunes. So I would lock myself in the room and just like pretend I was Paul McCartney and sing his parts. And then I would do George and then I would do the harmonies, and it was like, oh, that right there was like, okay, I really dig how these harmonies are working. So that was where I first trained. And then of course, I'm a chameleon. I just like love to watch what other artists do. So I've been to so many concerts. I mean, we're talking about Day on the Greens and the Soul Picnics and on and on and on and all these concerts. So what I did was I started watching what they were doing. And then one of the things that my dad brought to me, he says, hey, if you're going to get in the business, you can't just be a singer. You have to learn everything. And, you know, my partner Bob Schubert told me the same thing. You can't just like go up on stage and just sing. You got to know how this whole thing works. So I ended up working as a security guard for the Stars and being around people like Ibrahim Ferreras, which is from Buena Vista Social Club, Kenny Loggins, Smokey Robinson. I got to sit with Smokey Robinson for like 45 minutes and just talking, and I just picked his brain about stuff. So I watched how they arrived on stage. I watched how they did sound check. I did everything. So I had the best of the best teachers that this music business could ever, you know, bring to you, and I just like learned and learned what they did, and just I realized one thing: you need to have your own voice, you have to have your own style, and you can't be an imitator. You have to be you know, yourself, genuine, you know, and you have to bring it, and when you go up there you sing, you know, and that's what it was about. So that's how I learned. Eventually down the road I did get a voice teacher, and he was over in in this East Bay area. His name was Kelly Rand. His real name was Kelly Rangeli. He was from Vaudeville, and he was a teacher, and he taught at his house. He had a grand piano, a black one and a white one, and they faced each other. It was like crazy. This house was amazing. He was my voice teacher, and the first thing he taught me is stand up straight. You know, what are you wearing? Look at the people. You know, what's your hands doing? This and that. Oh, you're slouching. No. And he was just like one of those old school guys. So he taught me a lot, you know?
Yeah, he taught you like stage presence and poise. I remember when I was out there trying to do the singing thing. And I know that it's not just something that, you, like you said, can walk up on the stage and just do. There is a certain image or presence that people are expecting from the person who is entertaining them. And wow, you learned from someone in Vaudeville. How did you come in contact with Kelly?
Well, you know, it was I had done a show in Walnut Creek, and I was like, I guest appeared, and I sang with these guys, and they wanted me to sing. And you know, it was so funny back in the day when they would have me sing. It was either La Bamba or sing this or whatever. And he happened to have been at the restaurant, and he saw me. And he came up to me after. He goes, you know what your problem is? You're singing through your throat. And I was just like, who is this dude? You know, like, you're singing through your throat. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, and another thing is that, you know, you're up there and you're looking at the floor. Where are you looking at the floor? Well, if you're going to be a singer. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold it. My name is Carlos. What's your name? He says, my name is Kelly Rand. And he was so sophisticated and classy. I mean, like we're talking about the cats, like, from back in the day, like you know, because of Vaudeville, he was just dressed to the T, and he was just telling me. And so I basically said, I want to talk to you about this. And so he sure enough took me under his wing. So that's how I met him. And we became really dear friends, and he just, you know, coached me. And then after that, it was just like, I can't teach you no more. You got to go out there and become who you are. And I was like, okay, cool. And, you know, I had opportunity with some other voice teachers. I worked with a lady out of Alameda, and she was a fantastic voice teacher. But I've taken as much as I could, never learned enough, because I'm ready to take some more lessons. But they gave me the instruments, and then they said, you have to learn baptism by fire. Get out there and work.
Right, and it seemed to me like there's a lot of confidence that was actually taught, too, because once, I guess we all know that if you are prepped and you know what you're doing, then you actually go out there and do it. You don't have to think about those things when you're actually out there performing. So I want to step back with Smokey Robinson. You got a chance to pick his brain. What was some of the wisdom that he gave to you as a performer?
Well, one of the things that he did say to me was is that you are only as good as that last time that you sing. And so whatever you're going to do, you got to make sure that, you know, you're prepared, and whoever you're working with, they have to be prepared as well, because that's your only chance you're going to get. You can go up there and just fluff it, I guess, is what he was trying to say, or you go up there, but you have to be prepared. And him being such a workaholic, I mean, the guy had so much under his belt and working with so many cats, and now he was, you know, he's on his own, and he's singing with this amazing band behind him. He struck me. And then he talked about stuff like Stevie Wonder. It was so funny. We're talking about Stevie, and I said, so what's Stevie like? And he goes, you don't stop talking. And I just started laughing, you know. And then we were talking about just music in general. And he said, what you're going to sing and what you're going to say, it's got to come from your heart and soul. You just can't make it up, and you just can't be unreal. So it really struck a nerve, you know, because it's like, I guess that's how I write my music, and that's what I like to sing, is stuff that moves your heart, your soul, you know, romance. I mean, now in these day and ages, I don't know how these cats are even dating or romancing or doing anything, courting. I mean, back in the day, you would, you know, sit out in the front of the house with your car stereo on, playing your favorite song or whatever it was, you know, just trying to get that girl to like you. And now these guys are, like, texting, and it's like, really? What are you doing? You know, so the words, you know, back in the day in music was, you know, so nice. It was, you know, pretty music, pretty lines, pretty things. Not like, hey, yo, girl, what's up? Come over here right now. It's like, it's ridiculous,
right,
you know.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
you know, so.
I'm not really a fan of, like, a lot of the new stuff that's out there. Every now and then something will catch me, but you're absolutely right. And that's what I look for when I, as an appreciator of music. You mentioned Kenny Loggins, who I love immensely. He's very soulful, but, you know, it's the words and the actual music behind it. It's like, what does it do to your soul? And I would really like there to be some type of show out there that, you know, is dedicated to music of the soul. So that's why I pride myself here on The Touch of Grace, bringing meaningful artists onto the show to talk about the beauty of art, and definitely music is in the forefront. So you mentioned being a security guard. Is that where you met Keith Graham?
Pardon me?
Is that where you met Keith Graham? Because he was a celebrity bodyguard for James Brown for years, and he's the one that...
No, I met Keith through family and stuff, and, you know, of course, he was always touring and doing stuff with James Brown, and we ended up becoming, you know, dear friends, and he's such great support staff, and, you know, he's come up to me and says, all right, man, that was cool, but you know what, you guys got to change the way that you guys look, and when you walk up there, you know, this is what's got to, you know, you got to throw it down, and, you know, and, hey, wait a minute, when you were stepping up there, don't do this and don't do that. He's fantastic. The guy's got, like, some sick knowledge of information. I mean, the crew's around with the hardest working man in the business. Come on now. That's a big shoe to fill. And I try to be as close as I can to his hardest working man. I might be about his toenail, and that's about it. But I work my butt off, you know? I'll tell you. But, yeah, Keith has been very supportive and assisting, and we look forward to actually doing some stuff in the future. We have had some opportunities that are going to be coming up here where we might be doing some traveling, and I want to bring him with me because he knows the road. He knows the business, and, you know, a lot of cats get lost in this situation, and fortunately we all have our heads on so tight it's not even a worry, you know, because we all love and support the music and stuff like that. But it's always good to have somebody in your camp that can oversee what's going on in regards to what's happening at the venue, what's going on outside of it and all that, because our job is to focus on our music and stuff like that, and sometimes you get lost with wearing too many hats, and, you know, when you got somebody that already knows this whole thing, it makes you feel secure and safe at the same time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, wearing too many hats, and to have someone like Keith Graham who has been in the business for so long, it's just so much of a blessing to have somebody that even would want to take time, because, like you said, you know, being down to earth and, you know, being kind and just being genuine, you know, you realize that even in a business that has a bunch of sharks swimming around in it and so many pitfalls in it, there are great people in the mix. And so that's real cool. I found Keith to be a very charming guy, very honest, very caring about James Brown. So he really told me some things about James Brown that I will always carry around with me. So, Carlos, let's talk about Rukatan, and I'm pretty sure I'm not pronouncing that right. So can you say it for the listeners today?
No, you said it good, man. It's Rukatan. You got to roll that R. So it's a R, and then you put that Rukatan. So let me hear you say Rukatan.
Rukatan.
That's good.
Yeah,
you
man, always,
you?
Yeah, you know what? My mother used to always tell me I'd be going across the street when we lived down there. I think it was in Texas or Arizona, and she said people thought you were Mexican because you was always hanging out over at the Mexican's house. So I don't know if that makes me an honorary Mexican or not, but I just love the culture. It's so much.
No man,
it's so
yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. So how did you guys come together? And is this the original lineup from the beginning?
This is the original lineup, except for my cousin Ed. He's doing some of his own stuff right now, and he's in the studio and, you know, working on that. And that's when Carlos Hernandez came into the project, and he's been assisting us and playing guitar. But I've been with these cats for – this will be coming up on its fifth year anniversary of Rukatan. And before that, we had another project that we had been brought upon, and they gave me the opportunity to write. And myself and some other cats, and my keyboardist playing hoops, Jose Angel Amador, and myself, and Ray Uribes, we were working in a project called La Ventana. And it was like an original project with some tasty cover tunes in there. But once we realized that we wanted to continue being original and we wanted no limitations and no boundaries, we decided that we needed to go in a direction where all we did was focus on this music. So, yeah, these cats have been together. And then, of course, Blessing, we ended up getting Brian Camara, and Brian is the drummer, and his nickname, by the way, in Spanish is El Reloj in the Bay Area. That means the clock. The kid is just like, his timing is ridiculous. And then you've got Derek Rolando, who is another amazing, amazing percussionist. I mean, he's like a walking encyclopedia. The guy knows everything from Afro-Cuban to the whatever's going on in Latin America and all that. He plays congas, bongo, timbali, hand percussion, and those two guys are the glue that keeps everything together. And then we got this, the vocals up front. But yeah, Rocatan's been around now for 5 years, and the guys I'm working with right now are amazing, and they're great songwriters, and we work great together.
Yeah, and that's an important thing that you said, that you work great together, chemistry and personality. From your perspective, how much do they play a role in presenting the sound and the presence to the fans?
Well, I guess I didn't understand the question, so if you don't mind asking it one more time.
Oh, sure, no worries. Chemistry and personality, because you said that you guys work well together. So how much does that play a role in presenting the sound and the presence?
Are you kidding me? That's like... I think that's the main component, you know, of what it is. Think about it. It's like you're like, it's like being married, basically. It's like, you know, you're, and then, of course, as a, being an artist and musician and stuff, you're like exposed completely, because what you're doing is you're basically playing, or you're writing, or you're composing, or whatever you're doing, and you're completely, like, my description is like each of us are like on a totem pole, and we're, you know, completely buck naked, and you can see every freckle, everything, abrasion on your body. And so when you're sitting there creating music together, you have to know how to communicate, and you have to communicate incredibly well, because, you know, egos get in the way, or things are said wrong, or maybe something didn't work out. And, you know, and if you don't have a good foundation, a good relationship, you have nothing. And it comes off on stage, it comes out on your music, it comes out. So when you can find cats that support you and are completely there for you, it's amazing. It's a blessing is what it is from God.
Yeah, it definitely is a blessing from God, because I know that when you guys are up on stage performing, it's almost like that you're just one unit operating multiple units of the concept of Rocatan. So I know that, and as a lover of music, I've seen it. I got a chance to see Earth, Wind & Fire. I mean, so Phil Bailey, I never got a chance to see him perform with Maurice White, and I just hate that I missed that. That was a moment in time I guess I'll never get back. But
it's that was an amazing,
like,
show,
guys,
man.
Yeah, it's almost like that you guys can communicate with each other just by the eyes, or a movement that you make with your hand to, you know, bring the music to a certain state. So let's talk about that first performance at Rocatan, where you guys stepped on stage for the first time. How did that go? Where were you at that first performance?
Well, our first performances was, we had been in the studio creating an album. Most cats, you know, like, go out there and play songs, and then they'll add like one song or two songs. We decided we're going to go in the studio, create a CD, create a sound, and then go out and do it. So it was Cinco de Mayo 5 years ago. It's going to be this upcoming Cinco de Mayo, it'll be 5 years, and we went to this place in downtown Pleasanton, and we went there to perform, and we weren't sure how many people would show up. We had a full house, and here we are playing only original music. Think about it. You could go out to a place, and people are going to want to hear Mustang Sally or Brick House or whatever it is. They want to hear that. We came out there, and we threw down what was inside our heart and soul, and it was awesome, because we left it on the stage, and we were so proud of what the response was from the people. And people came up to us and said, "Wow, this is great, because you guys sound like nobody else. You sound like yourself." So sometimes it's scary, like, you sound like nobody else. Uh-oh, we're in trouble. But they were basically giving us a compliment. They were saying, "This is great," you know, because what we did was we crossed the Latin thing. Instead of just being completely Latin or being rock or being reggae or being world, we crossed every kind of thing that we could, and we created a positive sound. The guys were amazing. And of course, the cool thing about the cats that I play with and what Rocatan is that they rehearse, they work, they do their job, and everything is an intricate part of, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Everybody has a piece that goes into that slot. nobody goes over or above or beyond what needs to be played. They know what their spot is and what needs to be done to make the chemistry of the sound to come across perfect. And so it's like, what's the saying? Less is more, basically. And so they've done a great job, and that's how they continue to go. And if anything, they've just honed their skills and maybe even stronger.
Yeah, and definitely, as somebody sitting in the audience, you know, that is an appreciation that I have that a band can actually go out. Because I remember when I saw Rufus in Chaka Khan, I know that Chaka Khan was somewhat of a diva, but whenever they hit that stage, and I got a chance to see them perform a few years ago, it was a once-in-a-lifetime hit because they haven't performed with Rufus in a long time. But it was just, like, electric. You know, it's something that you just never, ever forget. So I'm just glad that you guys are out there doing it in respecting the craft. So let's talk about the name Rukatan. Rukatan, I can't say it. But who came up with the name Rukatan, and what does it mean?
Well, it's a trip because I don't know how many cats are out there that are musicians and stuff and who tried to find a name or a niche. You know, a lot of these cats just end up using their names, you know, to – because there's no band named Carlos Elizalde, but they use their names, and then that's how they go. But then, of course, you have a problem with that. But we were reading an article in Wall Street Journal, and at the time we were trying to figure out all these names. And the names that we were coming up with were ridiculous because it's like if we were going to be naming ourselves, there was this one name. Ed had came up with this one name. I think it was I don't remember the name. But anyways, we were all going to dress in black suits with white shirts and a black tie and a pink handkerchief or a white handkerchief coming out of our pocket, and we were going to be these romantic guys. And it was like, that's so cornball. Come on now. We can't do that. You know, so we were all laughing about it. We were trying to figure it out. And in Wall Street Journal, there was this article saying that in a week, and if not in a month, it's saying that there's like 1,000 bands that try to register their names to become that name of the band, and they couldn't even find a name, so they have to put a number or some crazy thing like the Hot Pans and the Mops. It's like, really? That's such a calling song? Because there's no names out there. So we're just sitting there going and battling. We had the music already ready to go, and, you know, it's like we weren't sure what was up, and I was getting frustrated. And I went to this place over in Dublin at this it's like a sports bar. They have like 100 TVs in there, and I was kicking back watching the Olympics and stuff, and I was surrounded by all these cats. It was like, this guy's wearing an Irish jersey, and there was this other guy over there, like Mexican jersey, and there was all these different people, and I was looking around, and while I was watching some sports and stuff, I was looking at my phone, and I was reading this article about internet and how they call, for example, Facebook, what's your tribe, and so the tribe is that what's your group of people that you have in your social network, right? And so I was looking at that, and I'm all, tribe, that's kind of cool. And so it was like that kind of popped out first. And while I was sitting there, I was writing down some stuff. And when I was young, there's this Ecuadorian thing. My father's Ecuadorian. He's originally Basque, but he was born in Ecuador. But when I was a child, he used to play this little game where he would take his elbow and, like, put it in the back of my back, and he would, like, tickle you, you know, like he would hold you down and tickle you, and he would sing this little sing song, and it would go like this. It would go, Arricotín, Arricotán, de la sala a la cocina, cuántos dedos tengo encima, which translates to, in Ricotín, Ricotán is like this little, like, kind of rhyme, and then how many fingers am I holding? And, you know, you'd be laughing, oh, three, no, four, and they would continue doing that. So I thought that was such a kind of little hook. So I started writing down, and all of a sudden I wrote down Rukatan. Cool. So immediately I went onto the internet, and I started, you know, looking at that. First I had spelled it R-U-K-A-T-A-N, and I'm like, nah, that's not cool. And, you know, I wanted it to be a little more, you know, tribal. So I went to R-U-C-K-A-T-A-N. And I searched for about 45 minutes. I forgot about what was going on with sports, and I just kept searching, searching, searching. And then I wrote down Latin. I said, Latin tribe, Rukatan, Latin tribe. That's kind of a cool little thing there. And I searched, and I didn't find anything. So, of course, I approached the guys. I said, here's the deal. We're a world music band that incorporates Latin, reggae, which is a Caribbean flair, and soul and rock. So what we are is Rukatan, Latin tribe. And so whoever comes to hear our music eventually will become part of our tribe, and they will spread the positive image and energy that we have created. So that's what we flew with it, and it became a very primal thing that has done really well. And it's funny because if you get somebody from, like, from Texas, and they say, "What the hell's Rucatan?" It's like, that's about the funniest thing you'll ever hear. But it's like, no, man, it's Rucatan. So then that's where we put the hyphenation over the U, so it gives it that, it accents the U, so it's Rucatan, you know? So that's
where
that came from.
Well, you know what? So there is thought behind it, you know? And when you were describing the experience of, you know, trying to find a name for the group, I couldn't help but go back to the Temptations movie where they were, the five fellas were standing outside and they were trying to come up with, you know, a name that would mean something. And so they had these crazy names like the Eldridges. And then he says, "What, you mean the wristwatch?" You know? And so it was just like such a hilarious scene here, there, out there. I think he even said the Sclodums or something like that, but they just kind of looked at it, and then they came up.
I went to a concert in Kentucky at Jim Beam. I got invited over there, and they had this lineup of blues bands that were going to play and stuff. It was really cool. And the main act was the opening act was G Love and Special Sauce. And I thought, that's like probably the coolest like name I've ever heard. You know, it's like, wow, that's really cool. But you know, and they were a really cool band, and they actually, you know, have continued to grow and be what they are. But I just loved back in the day, you hit on Bill Bailey and Maurice White, you know, and all those cats. And it's like, I mean, Earth, Wind, and Fire, when you heard that, it was like so cool. Remember the posters and the album covers?
Oh, yeah.
All in all, that was like the coolest thing. So I was like, oh, the pyramids and all that. So that was like, you know, it was very, very happening. And then also you saw it with Carlos Santana. He did the same thing. He had the lion's head and the pyramids and all that, and just kind of like touching base on the culture of the past, you know, and also kind of giving you the future. So, yeah, man, there's some cool names out there. We're real blessed to be able to have this one, you know. I think it just came like everything else has come together. It's, again, a blessing, and I can't emphasize that. You know, you could have everything in this world, but without that positive energy that we have surrounding us, nothing would come to fruition.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. And I can't wait to get a chance to actually see you guys perform. Keith just shot me a message. He said he's known in the industry as Snowman. I forgot all about that, so yeah.
That
so,
is Snowman.
Yeah, man, that's the Snowman. So when I think of Latin music, again, we've talked about many names. I think about Tito Puente, Santana, the Miami Sound Machine, Willie Colon, Matt Bianco, Sergio Mendez, Celia Cruz, Pete Escovedo. Those are the names that I think of off the top of my head. So I know that you mentioned that you were inspired by soul music as well as Latin music. But who were your biggest inspirations, and are there any out there in mainstream now that you would like to work with?
Good question. I gotta say, there's probably like, you know, there's two that really inspired me. And again, you know, I told you this in our prior conversation, the Beatles. Their formula was just amazing. So, I mean, think about it. We're going how many years now? 50 years now. In fast forward, and their music still hangs, and it's just you could play it any which way. As a matter of fact, you got to pick up a killer CD by his name is Willie Chirino. Willie Chirino is a producer, and he's an artist. I believe he's from Cuba, and he got some of the best Cuban and Puerto Rican artists, and he redid all the Beatles tunes on this album, and oh my goodness, you should hear like Yellow Submarine, the way they did it. They added a full-blown salsa feel to it, and then they got Because, which is a real beautiful song, and they added like a conga background, and these harmonies are just intoxicating. So, yes, Beatles are very important to me because their formula was right, and that's what these young cats right now are starting to go back to, Motown and the Beatles. Those themes were like my soundtrack. Bob Marley really was instrumental in creating what I thought was the most important thing in life, and that's one. And you know, so those words right there, just that word one and peace and love, is just so important. It's the groundwork, the blueprint of life, you know. And sometimes we forget about it. We think about other stuff, and so, you know, his sound was amazing, and what a story. What a story from that guy, you know, coming from where he came from, and for him to navigate and create this music, and it still continues to be a part of everybody's soundtrack. So, but in future-wise, there's a couple cats that I tell you I would love to have Rukatan work with, and we've been having really cool conversations. Have you ever heard of a band called Mana?
No, I haven't. I'm going to look them up, though.
Yeah, check them out, Mana. Man. You got to check them out. M-A-N-A. And they're from Aguascalientes, Mexico. And how could I describe them? They would be as powerful as you two. Imagine that. They're that internationally global band. And their music is like a cross between reggae with Latin. And it's just, it's such a cool scene. And these guys rock it. They have great messages. And they've worked with probably some of the best artists out there in the world in regards to sharing stages with them. As a matter of fact, Carlos Santana just did an album. It's called Corazon. And there's a really cool video out there that shows them doing the show down in Guadalajara. Actually, they did the show in Puerto Vallarta. And the singer from Maná showed up and sang. And you have Gloria Estefan on there. You got Juanes, which is from Colombia. And all these other cats, the Fabulous Cadillacs, another band. And so what they did was an all-Spanish album, kind of like reminiscent to the band, the album that Carlos Santana did with all the artists that he brought in, which was the Supernatural album. Remember that album?
Yeah,
so it's kind of like that.
Rob Thomas. Yeah, Rob Thomas was on there. And God, there were a number of people that were on there. Yeah, great album. I'm going to have to look them up.
Yeah, you got to check that out. As a matter of fact, on that album, there's a song called Corazon Espinado, which was done with Maná and Carlos Santana, and Carlos plays the guitar on that. But Maná is, we've been having some really cool conversations with their management, and we became real good friends. I went down to NAMM and hooked up with Fabian, and we became really dear friends and stuff. And the guitar player that plays with Maná is related to a dear friend of ours. His cousin, Javier Rain, who lives here in the Bay Area, and he's a photographer that shot the photo album. But just go on there. I don't want to exhaust this, but Maná would be something that we really would like to collaborate with. Maybe not playing an album together or doing a song together. Maybe yes. You know, I think because our sounds would be great, but I think that what would be the dream thing would be for us to go tour with them and do a show together, maybe here in the Bay Area, because their fans are amazing. Remember what you were saying about Luis Miguel and everybody's there and it's such a positive energy? Well, when we went and saw them, I took 20 of my friends to go see Maná over at the Oakland Coliseum, and we had box seats. I took them there. I got the tickets through my job. And these guys had never seen Maná. And like you said before, the translation of the message and the positive energy and the music, they didn't speak a word of Spanish. My sister spoke Spanish, but the rest of the people did not speak any Spanish. And they said, and to this day, still say that was the best concert they went to. And so if you could imagine the Oakland Coliseum, I believe that the Oakland Coliseum holds 15 or 20,000 people in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The 15 or 20, and 20,000 people were singing to the top of their lungs every song. And the production and the show was just amazing. Amazing.
Well, I would definitely love to check them out because, again, like you mentioned about Luis Miguel and the translation, you know, if you are a lover of music, it doesn't matter if you don't really know the words per se, you know. But, I could sing Solamente Un Vez, but I know that, you know, the meaning behind the songs that are performed are so – they're like stories. So even though it's Solamente Un Vez, it was for this one time only, I have your love or something of that nature. And it just, oh, my God, it just sends me. So I definitely can't wait to see that. And I'll send some prayers up that that happens for Rukatan because you guys are certainly special in your own right. So now we were talking of performances. The energy level of your set, what drives that energy from you that you're able to project it out to the audience night after night?
Huh. It's like breathing. It's like getting on a roller coaster ride, and that ride when it's over, it's like so exhilarating, so amazing. It's like that, but you're doing it with seven guys, and it's like you're just going through the peaks, and you're going through the drops, and you're going through the turns and everything. And when it's over, it's almost depressing, because when you're done with it, it's like you wish that the light would never go away. And it's, I'm not talking about,
right,
forget about sitting there playing music because you want to be on stage and, you know, when people look at you. It's just when you've got those components firing at the same time. Of course, it's not an 8-cylinder, but this is a 7-cylinder that runs like a 12V, I'm telling you right now. And it's like when those pistons are pumping and the music is being played and you get lost into it, it's just, it's there's nothing out there. There's really nothing out there that can compare to that energy. And and then when you look out and you see people singing the music and responding and acting and coming up and saying, wow, you know, you made a difference. You've changed my attitude, or thank you very much. You know, this is what was going down. And our music is able to transport them or take them to a positive. It's just, that's what it is, man. That's what keeps you going, and you can't wait. It's the best drug I've ever experienced. I mean, there's nothing like it. It's like, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is amazing. So what we're going to do, Carlos, we're going to go ahead and take a music break, just a hot minute. I'm going to go ahead and play this La Murba, P-Town. And so when we come back, then we're going to go ahead and get into the final of the interview. But this has just been incredible. So kick back for a minute. We're going to listen to some music, and then we're going to come back. Is that okay with you?
And by the way, before you go, that La Murba, that song came from back in the day. That's an old tune that we brought back to life and stuff, and we played, and then we incorporated that with a Ricky Martin tune when we play it live, which is La Murga Goes Into La Bomba. But those are two old songs that were, you know, they're like folkloric songs, and when we play them, I don't care what language, what planet you're from, that dance floor just fills up, and everybody just loses their mind. So we give credit to the folks that created those songs. Those are some songs, that's one of our tasty covers that we throw in there.
Oh, great. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen who have tuned in today, we are about to hear La Murga. So sit back and relax, and we'll be right back with the interview.
Open the door down, Ken. Latin boom, boom. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. Boom, boom. All right. Now, here it goes like this. Check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Are you guys having a good time? Rukatan.com. Rukatan.
From a music set that was Rukatan and La Murga P-Town. So, Carlos, do you remember that performance?
Yeah, that was cool, man. It was they got this thing they call the the first Wednesday, and with beautiful weather, and the place was packed. There must have been about 2,000 to 3,000 people out there, and
wow.
They were all just having fun. It was just killer. And the best part of that is that there was a sea of beautiful people dancing. And I got to tell you, man, got to give a little props. My mom, she's 86 years old. The lady still runs every day 4 miles. And don't go doing those shots of tequila with her because you will be falling down. But she was the first one on the dance floor, and she's the last one on the dance floor. So she was in the middle of this big, giant dance frenzy going on, and she was dancing around. And, of course, the band was just killing. That's one of the songs that we throw out there that is kind of like something that we've been doing for a few years, and people just love those old tunes, and so we're kind of reminiscent to the past, and then we've made it into a future kind of sound. But yeah, that was a cool thing there. Good fans.
Yeah, that really was. I was over there jamming, and you could even see me. I was doing my little cha-chas. I was sitting here. I was like, whoa, this is just hot. So I know that Murgat is a form of popular musical theater performed in Uruguay during the Carnival season. So I know that you participated in the San Francisco Carnival. How was the performance like? What was the atmosphere like over there?
Wow, talk about it. We had the perfect time slot. So what we did is they put us in at 3 o'clock. So that's right there, right after the parade had gotten over, right? And so thousands and thousands of people were coming off of the Mission and off the side streets from watching the parade, and they were just funneling into Harrison Street. And we were on the main stage on the opposite side, which is there's one on 17th Street and there's one on 22nd Street. And we were on the 22nd Street stage, and, of course, we got up there, and there was right prior to us, there was this really cool band that was playing like a little mix between reggae and hip-hop. And prior to that, they had this big, like, 30-piece Brazilian drum corps that, and they had the dancers that got up on stage and they did the total samba thing, and it was just like, it was cool. You know, they were doing Carnival. But when we got up there, all of a sudden it was like, if you look on our pictures on the Rucatan website, or if you look on my Facebook, and you'll see there's a couple pictures, thousands of people. It's like two blocks long, straight down. It's like an amazing shot. And the people were like waiting for us to get up there because what it was is it was a two-hit show. First we got up and we warmed up the crowd, and then the legendary artist that's been in the Bay Area, he wrote a song called Suavecito. His name is Richard B. and Stoppel were the headliners. So it was like 1-2 punch, you know?
Man,
so we got up there and rocked the house, and it was like awesome. And it was like people went nuts. And you'll know this when you and I meet and stuff. I'm like in the production. So I ended up going and renting a confetti cannon. Now, I'm not talking about a confetti cannon that shoots off. You know, this thing will shoot 50 pounds of confetti in 1 minute. So if you can imagine, with a CO2 tank. So when we went into this one song that we have, it's called Guacamole, and it starts off with this really cool merengue-style keyboard up front, and then we scream Guacamole, and the crowd was just there. We shot this cannon off with confetti and just doused everybody, and it was just like, here we go, it's on. And they were dancing and having a good time, and you know, we were very blessed. We had Greg Landau, who is a Grammy Award-winning producer, was out there. We had Latin Rock Inc. representing us. We had Camilo Lando. We had all kinds of artists out in the audience, you know, and, of course, Richard Bean was right there on the side. So we went out there, warmed up the crowd, and it's always cool when us two get together because we set them up and they knock them down.
Yeah, I saw you actually performing. You are definitely charisma, I have to tell you. If I looked up charisma in the dictionary, then I would definitely see Carlos Ella Zalde's picture on it, because you just got it rocking. So we talked about the San Francisco Carnival event. Have you been or do you plan to go to Brazil for that big event?
Well, you know what's going on right now. I got picked up by AKG at the beginning of the year as endorsement, and AKG has their own stage in Brazil, and they actually have a huge stage that they got set up for the World Cup over there. And we were supposed to go out there and possibly perform and stuff, but that didn't come to fruition just because so much things that were going on and stuff. But we are planning on going into Latin America. We have people in Colombia, Ecuador, and we want to go to Brazil. That's my dream. You know, I'll tell you right now, my wife, my friends can all attest to that. When I die, come back as a new life, I'm going to come back as a Brazilian, because those people are from another planet, let me tell you. They know how to eat, breathe, sleep, and their music and their whole energy is just amazing. But yeah, we are working on trying to get something going on into Latin America because our music transfers and there's no boundaries there. It's just like the whole thing would be just great. But Brazil, what a place.
Yeah, definitely a beautiful place. A friend of mine got a chance to go back there a couple of years ago, and she was talking about how beautiful the people were back there. And then I remember Michael Jackson shot his They Don't Care About Us video over there, as well as Snoop Dogg and Pharrell did the beautiful video over there. Yeah, so, you know, I want to see Brazil, too. It just looks so beautiful. If only to just walk up to that big Jesus with his hands spread out overlooking the city. Yeah, I think that would just be an incredible, incredible time over there. So hopefully when you're over there, I'm over there, too, so I could cheer you guys on. So the question that I have.
Why don't you just come with us? Why don't you come with us?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Well, you know what?
You
hey, I want to go. You just let me know
let's
when
go.
I want to go. Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
You
want to
know something? Well, somebody's already going to be laying the groundwork for us. Our drummer, Brian Camada, is going. He leaves on July 6th, and he'll be there from July 6th to the 20th in Brazil. So he's going to go out there and go see a little bit of some soccer and go see the Brazil and everything. But he's going to be doing some groundwork. But, man, am I envious and jealous. That boy's going to Brazil, and I haven't been there yet. Come on now. Let's go.
Oh, no, but it's coming. It's coming. You know, just give it up to the man upstairs. It's coming. So who keeps the booking and traveling activities? God, I got wrapped up in that moment, let me just tell you, Carlos. Who keeps the booking and the traveling activities tied for Rukatan?
I got to tell you, I wear about 10,000 hats, and so I'm trying to do everything myself. I happen to have some great people in my corner that are assisting me and getting me some great projects. I've got Dr. Bernardo Gonzalez, who's with Latin Rock, Inc., and he's done some really cool stuff in exposing us here in the Bay Area, opening up for cats like Carlos Santana, Malo, El Chicano, Tierra. We've opened up for some of the legendary bands. We've been around Salvador Santana, which is Carlos' son. We've done shows for them. And now they're taking us down south, and we're going to be playing down in North Hollywood, and we're playing at Pismo Beach. We're headlining coming up August 23rd, 24th, 25th, I believe is the date. And then on the other side, we have a gentleman from Reno, and his name is George, and he's with Tabletop Productions, and he's touring us all over the West Coast, too. So we're bringing our music up north to Santa Rosa. We're going up to North Shore, Crystal Bay Palace, which will be up in Nevada, and onward. We're going to be doing some stuff. So, but I'm the one that just wears all the hats and makes sure that I can expose these guys, because you were there on Carnival Day, and you know what those guys are like. Man, there's nothing I wouldn't do to have people see who they are, because they're just amazing artists. I'm so blessed to be surrounded with those guys. But that's what I do. Someday, hopefully, I'll get somebody like Snowman. You would listen out there. Maybe you could take the steering wheel here. You know, you've got all this experience. Come on. Let's take it on the road, brother.
Right. Well, let's do this real quick before we go to the final questions. Let's bring him on. Here, hold on a second, because I know he's out there listening. Snowman, you are on with Carlos and GD. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How's it going today, GD? What's up, my brother Carlos?
What's up, brother? How are you?
What's up, family? Hey, you guys sounding great out there, and you guys need to come out here and see Rukatan as soon as you get a chance, because these people are hot. They're smoking.
Thank you so kind.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, thanks a lot, Snowman, for calling in. That I really like that guy. He is just too cool. All right, so what can we expect from Rukatan in the future? I hope that's not a redundant question. I know that you've got some gigs that are coming up, like the tour in L.A. So you pretty much answered that question. Let's talk about the CDs that are currently on the market for purchase. What are they, and how can the fans get their hands on them?
Right now we have it, if you go onto our internet, to our website at www.rukatan, which is rukatan.com. We have it there available on our website, and we'll be doing the iTunes as well with both CDs. Right now we're getting ready to produce our second CD, and it's all ready to go. We're in pre-production right now, and if everything goes well, we should be done with this in the next couple months, because before we go down south, we want to have something in our hands. We've got 9 songs that are ready to go, and we want to make it like an 11 CD, sale, but we might just stay with 9. I mean, it doesn't have to be, and then we can just come out with a third CD. So that's what's going on right now. So we're ready to record with this lineup. And by the way, you know, I didn't tell you, but Carlos Hernandez, got to Google him. Google his name and find out who he is. I can't tell you anything, but when you find out who this cat is, you're going to see what his background and who his uncles are and, you know, what he's bringing to the package there. But check out Carlos Hernandez. That's our guitar player. I don't want to say anything else, but that's what we're doing right now, man. So I want to tell you one thing. Thank you very much, brother, for bringing us on your radio station and interviewing us. It's really nice, and what a wonderful compliment to give us an opportunity to just talk about us. And, again, I want to give shout-outs to my boys in the band, because these guys are not only great musicians but amazing writing partners. I've got Jose Angel Amador, Blaine Hoops, Ray Uribes, Carlos Hernandez. We got Derek Rolando, Brian Camara, and, you know, we are Rucatán.
All right. Well, you know what? I have to say that it has been an honor to have you on the show. Love the energy that you're putting out there to the universe, because it's definitely needed, and it's definitely something that we need in this day and age. And so you've just been interviewed on A Touch of Grace, Carlos, and here I am calling you Carlos. Okay, and I'm so bad. Yeah, Carlos, so you've been interviewed on A Touch of Grace. What is the best show here on Block Talk Radio?
Oh, man, you got it right now. Touch of Grace, you got to listen to this and tell the world. CC's in the house.
All right. Well, we have just had a great interview with Carlos Elizalde of Rucatán. So if you haven't copped any of their music, if you haven't gone to see them perform, you definitely got to catch them, because they are dynamite. So, Carlos, thanks for doing the show. I'm going to let you go ahead on with your afternoon, and you take care. Whenever you want to come back, let me know.
Bless you, brother. Big hug, and I will see you soon.
All right. You take care. All right. Wow, what an exciting show. I love Latin music. Like I said, I love Latin food. I love Latin music. And I just tell you, if you are listening to music by Rucatán and it doesn't inspire your spirit, then you probably need to shake yourself, because you might be the walking dead. So anyway, upcoming shows I want to talk about. Thursday the 12th, legendary Gerald Austin of the Manhattans will join me to discuss his life in the spotlight, being a member of the Manhattans. On the 13th, which is Friday, the soul singing group Split Image joins me to discuss music, and I send a shout-out to Yvette Brown over at Extravagant Entertainment. And then Saturday, Jared Manos, author of The Ghetto Plainsman, joins me to discuss his book and his other endeavors, working as a green leader, a youth worker, a health advocate, as well as being a vegan athlete. So Season 5 continues to sizzle here on A Touch of Grace. Special shout out to my friends over at World Media. You have just been a phenomenal support of the show. Again, special thanks to Keith A. Graham, celebrity security guard for James Brown for over 20 years. He's AKA Snowman. He's a terror. He protects protects the gems in the industry. And then on the final, in the words of the late Maya Angelou, always remember this: when someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. Maya, we love you. We miss you. Rest well, and I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks for making us 40,000 strong and climbing. You have just been interviewed on A Touch of Grace. Take care.